Traditions, we're told, take 50 years to make and just 5 minutes to break. This St. Patrick's Day, Micheál Martin is once again visiting Washington, D.C. for that peculiarly Irish tradition of handing a bowl of shamrocks to the sitting U.S. president. What was once, I think, a fairly tame, celebratory affair has become a far more unpredictable and potentially dangerous encounter. Because, let's face it, you never quite know what might happen when you set foot inside Donald J. Trump's Oval Office.
I got the Irish vote. I think I have it locked up pretty good, unless I did something very stupid, like drained your company, your wonderful place of all of its companies. If I drained Ireland of all of the companies, maybe I'd lose the Irish vote. I don't know. But right now, no, I love it. I've been there many times, as you know. Yes. And we don't want to do anything to hurt Ireland. We want to, but we do want fairness, and he understands.
It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. And as you know, every March, the Taoiseach of the day travels to Washington for the St. Patrick's Day visit, which includes the Shamrock Ceremony and a face-to-face meeting with the world's most powerful politician, the President of the United States of America. It's a ritual that dates way back to the 1950s and was long seen as a really valuable bit of soft diplomacy between two nations with a shared history. Now, Micheál Martin, he hasn't had a lot of luck when it comes to these meetings. In his first year as Taoiseach, a role he had waited quite a long time for, the visit was cancelled because of the pandemic travel restrictions. The following year, in 2022, he actually made it to Washington, and then he himself caught COVID, meaning his chat with Joe Biden was via Zoom from his hotel room across the road where he was in quarantine. Last year, the Taoiseach's meeting with Donald Trump at the White House came just days after the president had eviscerated Ukraine's Volodymyr Zelensky live on TV in the Oval Office. This year's meeting comes at a tense moment internationally, following the joint American-Israeli bombings in Iran. And I wonder if Donald Trump is aware of President Catherine Connolly's remarks that the strikes are a deliberate assault on international law. So politically, this may be one of the most delicate St. Patrick's Day meetings since, well, last year's, actually. To discuss all of this, I'm joined by News Talk's own Sean Defoe, who's been at some of those Oval Office events. Sean, you are very welcome back to News Talk Daily. I haven't seen you around News Talk HQ recently. Where have you been?
Yeah, it feels like I haven't been since, let's say, a war broke out. World War III started while I was off. I've been off because, thankfully, my wife, Jill, had our first child about 6 weeks ago now. So this is first week back for me. And yeah, I suppose you can say the world has gone to a bit of an SHIT storm. I've been dealing with SHIT of a different kind with dirty nappies the last 5 weeks.
Well, huge congratulations to you. I know you've actually been exploring first-time fatherhood on your Let Me Explain podcast in recent weeks.
Yeah, it's one of those things that just kind of, and speaking to other dads around News Talk, that has Frank Rainey, it's such a life changer. I mean, look, you know, having a kid is such a life changing thing. Your perspective just changes overnight completely on what's important and what actually matters to you. And we've been looking at that on the podcast, but it's sort of mad because I started recording those and you're thinking of all the big picture stuff. And really then you're in the trenches the first few weeks. Big picture stuff doesn't really matter. It's right. What does he need? Is it a feed? Is it a burp? Is it poo? It's, you know, one of the three, and your life is sort of reduced to that in 3 hour intervals for a few weeks. So it's nice to be able to talk about something else for a change on this particular podcast.
Okay, we will treat you with kid gloves though today, Sean, and I'll understand if you can't find a word, if you trip over a sentence, if your brain's just not quite as sharp as it normally is.
Yeah, the sleep deprivation. It's like being, I think elections over the last few years have been a good proving ground for it. You know, you learn to sleep in cat naps and whenever you can. So if I do forget who the President of the United States is over the next while, just be a little kind.
Yeah, no judgment, listeners. Okay, let's talk about this visit of Micheál Martin to the Oval Office to meet Donald Trump, round two, and it's happening this week. One thing that has really struck me when I've been listening to all the conversations about this and reading all the commentary about this is the language that is being used. It's like he is walking into hostile, dangerous territory. There's phrases like the lion's den, the snake pit, the bear pit, a minefield, a political trap, potentially walking into an ambush, walking a tightrope, a highwire act, a balancing act, running the gauntlet. Like, these are just some of the phrases that we have read. And I think it really sets the scene about how people potentially feel about a visit like this.
Oh, completely. And it's totally understandable, isn't it? You have this utterly mercurial president in Donald Trump. He can say and do, or he feels he can say and do, whatever he likes. And it doesn't matter who you are, whether you're a world leader, which would get you respect with other world leaders, that goes totally out the window. And this really started, I suppose, the most tense meeting, certainly I've ever covered, but probably ever, was last year in the lead up to it. Because as you mentioned in the introduction, he had absolutely eviscerated Vladimir Zelensky himself and J.D. Vance. There was no idea whether he was going to be constantly on the attack. The tariffs were the big thing going into it, how that was going to impact the Irish economy, the EU economy, the pharmaceutical sector. And we genuinely didn't know when we headed over to cover it what the reception was going to be like. In the end, it was totally pally, happy clappy. You had J.D. Vance wearing shamrock socks, and it was all like, oh yeah, you know, you did a bit of a job. It was almost patronizing, actually. You did a job on us in the pharmaceuticals, getting all the American companies over to Ireland, but we're going to take them back. And Micheál Martin was very happy with that. He stayed largely quiet in the Oval Office, didn't rise really to any of the comments, let Trump talk himself out. And to give you a sense of what it's like, I suppose, for a Trump Oval Office visit, as opposed to some of the others, when we went for Joe Biden, and sometimes we didn't quite get into the Oval Office again, as you'd mentioned on the Joe Biden trips because of the bad luck that Micheál Martin has, but you'd go in, you might be there for 3 or 4 minutes, you're sort of in a big massive scrum with all the American media and the Irish media trying to get in and get your microphone in. And Joe Biden said a few kind words and then that was it, you were ushered out. Donald Trump does it totally differently. He will just sit there. It becomes a news conference. Last time we were in there for an hour, I thought I was going to have to throw out the suit I was wearing for the amount of sweat that I was dripping through on it, because it was absolutely roasting. If you imagine 100 people in the Oval Office, which is not actually that big, it's smaller than it looks on a lot of the TV shows. And he took all sorts of questions on everything under the sun. So when you get into that kind of a scenario, particularly for a politician like Micheál Martin, who was very by the books, that's quite an intimidating place to go, because the conversation can go literally anywhere and you don't know what might set off the man next to you. So it is a bear pit potentially to go into.
Probably part of the reason that we do think about it so much too is because of the potential of an ambush here, because I don't think there's a person in Ireland who won't be able to recall that showdown with President Zelensky last year. Let's just take a listen to that.
Don't tell us what we're going to feel. We're trying to solve a problem. Don't tell us what we're going to feel.
I'm not telling you.
Because you're in no position to dictate that. Remember this. You're in no position to dictate what we're going to feel. We're going to feel very good.
You will feel influenced.
We're going to feel very good and very strong.
You will feel influenced.
You're right now not in a very good position. You've allowed yourself to be in a very bad position, and he happens to be right about it.
From the very beginning of the war,
you're not in a good position. You don't have the cards right now. With us, you start having
cards. I'm not playing cards.
Right now, you don't. You're playing cards,
Mr. President.
You're playing cards. You're gambling with the lives of millions of people. You're gambling with World War III. You're gambling with World War III.
But at the same time, I think it is different with the Irish, particularly for someone like Trump, who came up in the sort of New York, New Jersey property world, if you like, where there's a lot of Irish expat and Irish immigrants, and that vote that can be a big swing in American elections that he doesn't want to annoy.
Now, let's listen to your question that you asked President Trump last year, Sean.
Mr. President, it's Irish American Appreciation Month that you've named there. Who's your favourite Irish person?
Oh, there's so many. Are you kidding me? Well, I do happen to like your fighter. He's Connor's great, right? You know, talking about Connor. But you have a lot of great Irish fighters, actually. Great fighters. I don't know what that is, but Ireland's always had a lot of good fighters. I think your father was a great fighter, right?
He was, you're doing
wow.
Right.
Wow, and yet look at you, you're so smooth and so...
He was a very good defensive boxer.
He could
weave.
He was a really good...
He was a good boxer, yeah.
Right.
Boxed for Ireland. And
yeah. That's, that means you're genetically, guys. I'm not going to mess around.
So a lot of people saw that as sort of harmless banter about a famous Irish sports star, but many, many Others thought it really misjudged Irish sensitivities given the McGregor controversies. For you, though, as a journalist, did you sort of fulfil a bit of a West Wing fantasy moment there?
It wasn't my first question to Trump, in fairness, so I maybe had fulfilled that fantasy a bit more. And I actually did, because I got a bit of stick, actually, for asking that sort of a question in the White House. I would like to point out, I did ask earlier in the thing about tariffs, and a very serious and worthy question, you know, that got not much of an answer, not much of an interesting answer. But it, the look on Micheál Martin's face, I still remember when I did ask that question, and his advisor in particular, who was sitting next to him, was just like, knew exactly where it was going, knew who Donald Trump was going to say, and they were just thinking, how do we get out of this without in any way condoning Conor McGregor, who is such a figure of, rightfully, a figure of hate in Ireland? So it's one of those awkward ones, but it's those kind of questions. It tend to find, and it'll be really interesting this year, because obviously there's going to be big questions on Iran and on the war and the conflict and on oil and all the rest of it. They tend to be the ones that don't cause as big a controversy. Even last year, there were questions about Palestine, and the Taoiseach kind of got out of them and Donald Trump got around them. There wasn't a huge amount of controversy out of it. It's those ones that are sort of a little off the beaten path, or maybe a little bit more tongue-in-cheek, that can tend to throw up the difficult moments. And the big controversy of last was Micheál Martin said something on housing that a lot of people at home read to be essentially belittling the housing crisis. Wasn't the tone that I picked up there at the time. So it's little bits like that. You often think going into the Lion's Den, right, the big thing is going to be obviously, you know, the World War III potential conflict. But I would imagine it'll be something a little more off the beaten path that will cause the headlines.
You know why they have a housing crisis? Because they're doing so well. They can't produce houses fast enough. That's a good problem, not a bad problem.
It's a pretty
problem.
Good answer, President.
No, it's true.
What we hear there, as you say, is sort of this, it's almost loose, casual conversation. You know, there's bits of political theatre. There are some statements made. That actual meeting, though, that handing over the shamrock, it is a bit of a photo opportunity, isn't it? It is primarily quite a symbolic moment, a piece of the ritual that, as I say, we've been following here in this country since the 1950s. But there is a serious side to this meeting. There are political undertones, and there have certainly been over the decades. I'm just wondering, with a president like Donald Trump, is the meeting as substantive as it would have been in the past?
There's much more interaction than you might think on the day itself. Separate to that, and usually after that, they have a meeting, just the two of them and their advisors. And that's usually when really the push comes on from the Irish. And what I've heard from previous advisors is you go in with two or three things, particularly with the likes of Donald Trump, and you try to hammer them across in that meeting because he doesn't have the attention span to stick with it. But there have been other times, and the big one that comes to mind when it comes to challenging a US president is Enda Kenny back in 2017. And if you remember the time, it was the first time there was a lot of talk about it, that we were going to a Trump White House, immigration, build the wall, you know, barrier with Mexico, all this stuff was really, really big. Yeah, they did the happy clappy in the Oval and they exchanged the shamrock, but there are speeches afterwards. And really, Enda Kenny scored a big political point, or was very vocally critical. He described St. Patrick, by the way, as the patron saint of immigrants. And he said, Ireland came to America because deprived of liberty, of opportunity, of safety, of even food itself, the Irish believed. Four decades before Lady Liberty lifted her lamp, we were the wretched refuse on the teeming shore. And it seemed to go over Trump's head at the time, but it certainly wasn't missed by the administration. It wasn't missed by the international media or the media at home as well, and was a really big moment for a Taoiseach to go and say that 4 feet away from Donald Trump. This White House, there's no question, this Donald Trump term is far different from the last one. He had much more reasonable people around him, and he is a completely different beast this time around. So I don't know, would an Enda Kenny try doing something like that again? I certainly don't think Micheál Martin will. It's a weird one, because on one hand, there is this feeling, and I think all of us would have it, that you need to stand up to a bully, right? And someone who is causing disaster on the international stage and waging what many people believe to be a sort of an illegal war in Iran, and one that is literally costing every single person in Ireland now with their fuel and their home heating oil. And you like to think, yeah, we'll stand up to the bully and we'll sock it to them. But in this case, you're standing up to a bully who has full control of your bank account. Because if Donald Trump decides he could cripple the Irish economy tomorrow, you know, and he's threatened to do so. And as much as we might get, and any Taoiseach might get plaudits for 24 hours or a week for standing up to Donald Trump, Micheál Martin will know the consequences of doing that should he genuinely anger him are far too great to be make it worth the risk.
Yeah, I heard one commentator describing it as the Love Actually moment, you know, and everybody loves the idea of an Irish Taoiseach standing up to the might of the US. But that's movies. That's not real politic. And I do think somebody like Micheál Martin is totally aware and totally conscious of that. But yes, you contrast that with what Enda Kenny did and the fact that perhaps you can push the line a little bit further.
Yes, Peter.
Mr. President, has it been a good visit?
Very satisfactory indeed. We got what we came for. And our special relationship is still very special.
And Prime Minister?
I love that word, relationship. It covers all manner of sins, doesn't it? I fear that this has become a bad relationship. A relationship based on the President taking exactly what he wants and casually ignoring all those things that really matter to Britain.
And there's a happy ground, a middle ground where you don't seem too sheepish. You don't seem just polite and quiet in the corner. You don't seem to just be plumassing somebody and not have any integrity of your own, which I don't think people like either. But I think it is really difficult balancing that act. You said the moral onus last year was on him to mention Gaza, and he was very, very careful about that last year. Is the moral onus this year then to bring up the attacks on Iran? And with that in mind, do you think Donald Trump and the wider American administration, but particularly Donald Trump, is aware of the comments last week from President Connolly, although she didn't mention Donald Trump directly. She said the US-Israeli strikes were deliberate assaults on international law. And how does that go down, and how does that inform that whole meeting?
Yeah, I'm still trying to imagine Micheál Martin doing the Love Actually speech, you know, Roy Keane's right foot, Roy Keane's left foot for that matter. On Catherine Connolly, I don't know if Donald Trump himself will be aware of it, but there certainly will be people in the administration who will be. But I would be very surprised if there hadn't been a lot of briefing beforehand from Irish officials to say, look, she's, you know, we didn't want her. She's a sort of an independent president. The president doesn't have the same power and role. Don't mind her. It's not our view. And when it comes to Iran, it's sort of a strange one because, yes, a lot of people would say it was Gaza last year. You could argue it's Gaza again this year, but also the moral onus being on Iran. Micheál Martin has been hugely critical of Iran throughout his career. And it's one of the wrinkles in this particular conflict that same with you know, with Venezuela, when Donald Trump was doing that, it's not like he's taking out this great guy either or this great country. And Micheál Martin, in Dáil speeches and in pretty sharp exchanges with People Before Profit at the end of last year, was pointing out that Iran has been a destabilizer of the Middle East for 40 years. In his mind, you know, they're not the good guys here, regardless of what you think about international law and attacking a country without any clear aims and roles. So I imagine what he will do instead is he will talk about working towards solutions for the future of the Middle East or solutions for the future of Palestine. Last year, he praised Donald Trump's efforts towards peace. Not so sure he can do that this year with any sort of a straight face. So I don't think it will be anything direct that will annoy the US administration. But it would be very interesting, for example, were Micheál Martin to be asked, well, do you support what the US is doing in Iran? And to have to give a very direct verdict on it, that would be something that could land him potentially in a lot of trouble and might be a question from the travelling political journalists. So it is a fine balance, but Micheál Martin has no love lost for Iran, certainly for the former Ayatollah that was there. So I don't think it will be high on his agenda. I think what he's going to be doing is economic future, yes, mention the instability and how can we end that instability, but not necessarily in this sort of a crusade in the same way that the government, for example, has shown an awful lot of support for Palestine.
There was that other moment with the South African President Cyril Ramaphosa where he was forced to watch a video about allegations of genocide against white South Africans, a moment by all accounts he was completely unprepared for. Here's some of what happened.
Mr. President, it's like, what does it take from you for you to be convinced that there's no white genocide in South Africa?
Well, I can answer that for President. It's for him. No, seriously.
I'd rather have him answer.
Yeah, I'd rather answer
that. Our President will respond to you.
Yeah, let me.
Thank you, Mr. President.
It will take President Trump listening to the voices of South Africans, some of whom are his good friends.
But Mr. President, I must say that we have, we have thousands of stories talking about it. Sure. And we have documentaries, we have news stories, and that is Natalie here, somebody here to turn that? I could show you a couple of things, and I would, it has to be responded to.
Yeah, sure.
Let me see the articles, please, if you would, and turn the lights down, and just put this on, it's right behind you.
Oh, I actually shudder. I genuinely do, because I can recall those two meetings really viscerally when I hear those clips again. And I think it really does highlight, doesn't it, the challenge of predicting this really unpredictable president, particularly in front of the cameras. With that in mind, how do you think Micheál Martin will play it this time? Will he just do what he did last year? Just sit, as you say, politely, quietly, stroke his ego just gently, try and plumass him a little bit? Will he go full Keir Starmer on it? Best buddy, best chum, equally as uncomfortable for me, to be honest, but perhaps necessary? Or could there be that moment of confrontation? What do you predict?
No, I think it'd be very similar to last year. I can't imagine him doing the full row. It's also not really, like, Micheál Martin will do a little bit of plumassing best buddy stuff, but you probably heard the height of it when you played that clip earlier about his father. It's just not really in his style. He'll sort of sit back, let it come to him, hope there's nothing absolutely crazy that Donald Trump does. And you could just never rule it out. I mean, we have probably a stronger connection to the US than either Ukraine or South Africa would have. That does offer some element of protection, and sort of the ground will be laid. But the difficulty with putting forward that strategy is, and I think one of the big criticisms I had of him last year was that there were various times where Donald Trump was spouting absolute nonsense about the EU, about the European Union, saying it was set up to rob America and all this sort of just total claptrap. And Micheál Martin didn't butt in once. Perhaps he will go a little bit stronger this year, but to be honest, given the situation the world is in, given what we have seen from Donald Trump and how he reacts to leaders who challenge him, I think it will be very, very safe that Micheál Martin will play this. So there's two bits of this. There's one is just self-preservation and country preservation. Our economies are linked at the hip. That needs to be the number one thing in the Taoiseach's mind. Don't do anything on this trip to damage that, and potentially do some things to increase investment and to make sure that that relationship continues in the future. The other is sort of the moral argument is, do you stand up for your beliefs? Do you stand up for your allies? Do you make that stand? And part of the problem at the minute is there is no massive personality in European politics, arguably even in world politics, that can rival Trump's. He's just this black hole of constant news coverage, of charisma, it has to be said, because he didn't get where he is without an element of charisma, and just totally controlling everything around him. And in the past, we might have looked to an Angela Merkel or somebody like that, or even, for a while, Emmanuel Macron, perhaps. He's so weakened, you don't have that. Merz is quite a weak leader, or seems to be. And there isn't anyone within the European discussion who has that authority, really, to stand up to him and to provide a different narrative that the world will listen to. And certainly that's not Micheál Martin. And arguably that's not Micheál Martin's job. We're a small country on the periphery of Europe that has one goal, and that is to keep the economy afloat at the minute. And so he will play it very safe. I think he will know all of this in the back of his mind. But at the end of the day, if he decides to do a solo run or to take a stand, he might well get plaudits for a week and pain for years.
Sean Defoe, thanks so much, as always, for joining me on News Talk Daily. Well, for months and months now, commentators and those of us who follow politics closely have predicted that Micheál Martin's trip to Washington was going to be anything but straightforward. And far beyond the ceremonies and the photo opportunities that come with celebrating St. Patrick's Day, he is going to face the challenge of representing Ireland's interests at a time of real global tension, with the US and Israel engaged in a war with Iran whose legality is being widely debated. So every handshake and every word carries weight. For Micheál Martin, it is going to be a moment to navigate optics, to advance Ireland and our own policy. But I think for a lot of people, they do want to see him quietly test the limits of diplomacy. And that is why all of us will be watching with interest when he walks into the Oval Office and meets Donald Trump tomorrow. Sean's Let Me Explain podcast publishes every Thursday morning on the Go Loud Player. And if you like our podcast here at News Talk, please be sure to give us a like or a follow wherever it is that you listen to us. That way you will never miss one of our episodes. Until tomorrow, from me, Ciara Doherty, goodbye.